Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the day, from this day to that, for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
The future is uncertain. I know this. Death is inevitable. I know this. But one thing is certain, as free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. This is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
All right, welcome to the show, everybody. This is For Liberty. I am your host, Nick, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, iTunes, Zeno.fm, Roku TV, TuneIn, and a whole bunch of others that I never remember because I never write them down. I'm that good. Be sure to go to the homepage, check out the chat room, hit the little join button down at the bottom of the chat room that you see. Set yourself up an account with Element and get in there and start bouncing around ideas with everybody that's in there. Apparently, THC seems to be a big topic of this conversation at the moment. And also, if you check out the advertising spots, be sure to pick up some product down there if you see something that you like. And if you got something for sale, pick up an advertising spot on there. They're pretty cheap compared to everywhere else, and it helps keep us on the air. And as always, if you got some change, burning a hole in your pocket, you find some under the seats of your car, if you find some between the cushions of your couch, under your bed, or if you happen to have the misfortune of walking down the streets of San Francisco, please wash the feces off of it and sterilize it before you hit that donation button up at the top of the page and send it our way. We are 100% listener supported, and we need all the help we can get to keep us on the air, because you never know, they might be coming after us next. you know, once they get done with Alex Jones. So before I came on the show, I was got here half an hour before I came on the air because I was at a Wolf River Patriots get together down in New London, which is about 25 miles away from here. And we had one of the assemblymen running, who's running for office again on November 8th, showed up and gave his little spiel about what we should know and all of that. And I have not changed my mind. I still, after listening to this guy, the people in the crowd, this guy was not reading the room at all. The people that were there were hitting him with some pretty straight up questions and were looking for some straight up answers, and he couldn't give them. Especially when it came to, he was pretty good on a few things. Plus we had one of the local school board members there who is a member of the Republican Party, which is why he is there. When they talked about the CRT in the classrooms, we talked about bringing charges against people when they don't do their job in office. And of course, you know, they gave some half-assed answer, but the end result of it was, you know, by the time I had to leave, I was just like, why do the Republicans have no balls whatsoever? What the hell happened to their spine? I'm really sick of these mealy-mouthed, worthless Republicans saying, no, you vote for me. I'm going to stand up to the Democrats this time. This time, I promise you, we'll get something done. Of course, they're never going to do it. And I brought that up with the local bigwig DJ, Regular Joe, the other day when I said the same thing about the debate between the Wisconsin governors, you know, the candidate running against the current communist piece of shit. And it was just deflating a balloon watching this debate. It wasn't even a debate. It was a snore fest. Just, yeah, hi, I'm going to do, this is what I'm going to do if you elect me for office. And then I really mean it. I'm shaking my pen at you, so you know that I'm serious. I mean, it's ridiculous. This crop of politicians that we have. And what I brought up on the Regular Joe show is it was so uninspiring. I literally just almost went to sleep watching this thing. And where the hell are all the politicians like Carrie Lake? Why don't we get a Carrie Lake in Wisconsin? You know, I know she's doing her damnedest and to beat out Katie Hobbs down in Arizona, and I really hope she does so she can smack the shit out of the people in Wisconsin and get some of that election investigation results that we were promised over a year ago. And then, of course, the Republicans, I'm still here. I am shaking my pen at you, telling, you know, I'm serious about election integrity. And that's a problem. We don't have any. I mean, except for some of the ones that are coming up, the ones that we really need to look up to, the ones that are the loudest, the ones who are rocking the boat, you know, the ones who are making waves. But the rest of the establishment Republicans, it's absolutely, they're pitiful at best. And I've met this guy a couple of times, a guy named Dave Murphy, 56 assemblyman. And he's a good guy. I don't dislike the guy at all. But it's like just the people at this meeting knew more than he did. And some of the things that were explained to him went completely right over his head. It's like bringing up charges. Now, this was one of the highlights. Okay, and this is how – it's kind of the status response that you get from – because I've brought this up to my senator, my state senator, and my assemblyman more than a few times when I talked about going after Tony Evers for misconduct of office when he kept overextending the authority of the governor's office to keep us locked down, mandatory masks, you know, the whole spiel that of bullshit that we've been going over for the last 2 years. They didn't want to hear it. So somebody in the crowd had brought up the idea about bringing charges against some of these elected officials for committing election fraud and all of that. And you're like, well, how do you bring up charges? You know, the district attorneys are not going to do it. And one of the other guys who I know personally very well, as a matter of fact, said, no, you don't even need the district attorneys. You can get around the district attorneys to bring up charges against some of these officials. And it's not difficult. You just have to do it, and you got to be prepared to do the legwork in it. Write an affidavit. Swear to an affidavit in front of a judge. Take the affirmation oath, and you swear this affidavit is absolutely true. The judge then will be able to bring the charge. I'm going to give you a very abbreviated version of it because I'm not all that well versed in it. But once the judge says, okay, yeah, this is good, we need to bring formal charges, hands it off to the sheriff. And the sheriff has the authority to go arrest whoever the charges are being levied against. The district attorney has nothing to do with it. And after all of this was explained, and then, of course, somebody involved in the chain of events here doesn't want to go along with it, well, issue a writ quo warranto, and you get them in trouble too. So, Mr. Assemblyman was here. He's like, yes. And in case anybody doesn't know who's listening, who's not familiar with Wisconsin politics, Josh Paul is the attorney general for the state, complete and utterly in the back pocket of our communist governor that we have here. So, of course, he's never going to bring up any charges against anybody as long as they're going along with the leftist program. So this assemblyman that we had there, he's like, well, yes, but you're never going to get Josh Paul to go along with it. And he's like, you don't have to. Just told you that the district attorneys and even the attorney general, they're not involved. You've completely removed them from the chain of events. Yes, but I mean, see, that's the problem, though. Without the attorney general, you can't bring the charges. It's like, and all I did when the guy finally sat down, sitting right next to me, and I just said, man, that went right over his head. It's like, yep. It's like, it's either deliberate or it's not. It's either he's ignorant. I'm not saying he's stupid, and maybe he's ignorant of the facts or of this procedure, or he simply just doesn't want to even acknowledge that it exists or something, and he's more familiar with the normal processes of bringing charges of any kind whatsoever against a sitting elected official for anything. And it's mind-numbing because all you hear is like, well, if you vote for us this time, we'll get things worked out. And it's like, they're never going to do it. So he was good on some stuff, but then, when the people in the crowd started hitting him with the three-pointers, he couldn't defend it. He couldn't defend the net. That's a basketball reference. And it wasn't like he was even trying. He started getting frustrated when the idea of CRT came up in school. Okay, he was all right on that. He acknowledged, yes, CRT is being taught in school. And I posed a question to him and said, well, if that's the case, then how is it that the governor, during the debate, made the claim that CRT is not being taught in school? And he's like, well, because they reword things and whatever. And then the guy from the school board, and this was actually pretty good, the guy from the school board stood up and was given a couple of minutes to explain how it works, since he's the president of the local school board in that area. And he said, well, it's very simple. They don't talk about it. They never call it CRT anymore. So this is something we kind of got to watch out for, because they will still put that in their classroom. They will still bring up white supremacy. They will still bring up Black Lives Matter. All the crap that the CRT was trying, everything is racist and it's only white people's fault, etc. They'll still teach that in the classrooms. They simply won't call it CRT. So then they have, we're not teaching CRT because, we don't call it that, but it's still in your classroom. And one of the things that they said, that the school board member said, was keep an eye on your kids. If you really want to find out if they're being taught CRT in the classrooms, pay attention to what's happening with your kids. Watch what they're look at their schoolwork. Pay attention to their behavior. Listen to what they say. Listen to them tell you what the teacher told them that day in class. And one of the other methods is, and I wasn't even aware of this one, But you, as a parent, have the right to sit in on a class. If you make arrangements, you can go and sit in on the class and watch. Of course, the teacher's not going to say anything at that point because they don't want you to know that they're still teaching CRT in the classrooms. So then the question gets posited to Mr. Assemblyman, well, what are you going to do to stop it? Well, you know, that's the school board has to get involved, and it's like, oh, dear God, here we go. Again, I'm losing my mind here trying to figure out where are your balls? It's like the scene in Batman when the Joker's saying, what happened? Your balls drop off? And this ridiculous debate that we had, that was absolute proof of it. It was absolutely ridiculous. But so this is this guy talking to everybody. He was getting peppered so hard with questions. And it was funny at the beginning of his little shtick there. He was, oh, I'm going to flip it around on you. I'm going to start peppering you guys with questions. Well, everybody knew the answers to the questions he was asking, so it wasn't really that bad. But when people started hammering him with, okay, we need election, we need to fix the elections. I don't believe that the election machines were hacked. Everybody, you could have heard a pin drop. You know, if they have all these other ways to rig it, why would they? Why would you need to hack the voting machines? It's like, did you not watch anything about the Dominion voting machines? Have you never seen the documentary Hacking Democracy that came out over 10 years ago? Did you not notice that professional hackers, when Mike Lindell did his presentation, when they showed you how the information can be moved around inside the voting machine, outside the voting machines, re-implanted into the machine, and then come up with the correct numbers, only now the values of the votes have been changed, so it doesn't look like anything really happened. If it's they're not being hacked, why the F do they need a damn modem in them in the first place? A wireless one, no less. I really don't have an answer for that. But, you know, they weren't hacked. I mean, there were voting irregularities. And then... the questions came up. Well, what are you doing about it since you happen to sit on the Elections Commission? Well, tap danced around that one a little bit too. Didn't sound like very much of a straight answer. The correct answer that he should have been coming up with, especially if we get a Republican governor, who, by the way, who isn't all that great anyway, as far as I can tell so far. I hope he does do good, but chances are it's like, whatever. But the correct answer, what he should have said, being on the election committee in the assembly, was we're getting rid of WEC, the Wisconsin Election Commission, period. It's done. It's over. Then we're going to see who did what laws were violated during the 2020 elections and probably before that. We are going to slam the living hell out of the people involved in it. If anybody, by the way, WEC has been doing this, which was telling clerks around the state to go ahead and violate election laws, slam them, you know, which one of the people in WEC sent out the memo? Well, then guess what? You get to go to jail. Never heard any of that. I never once heard the guy say, we are going to hold people accountable. We are getting rid of WEC. We are going to straighten the election system out to the point of where there is no more, none of this mail-in voting crap. Active military outside the state and people who are disabled aside, but they cannot be harvesting ballots within the nursing homes. They cannot go out harvesting ballots. Ballot boxes have been declared illegal in Wisconsin, always have been, always were, but yet they're still keeping the votes from 2020. Even though they, with that Dinesh D'Souza film, they showed them stuffing the ballot boxes, you know, people going up multiple times with multiple ballots, shoving them in there, which they could have been busted and put in jail for quite a long time, which they should have been, but they never were. They simply don't want to touch election integrity. That's the biggest issue, even though they're coming out and saying that they do. I have yet to see any. I'm tired of hearing talk. I don't want to hear any more talk from any more politicians. I'm sick to death of it. You should be too, because every time they screw something up, from our point of view, they, every time they screw something up, and believe me, I want to drop F-bombs left and right right now after going to this meeting, but I'm holding my tongue. I'm trying to be good about it. But I'm sick of hearing talk from these people and seeing nothing for action. Or not seeing anything get done. Nothing moves in the direction that it should be. And from judging from the people in the crowd there that were that, and again, it's not like a festival's crowd or anything like that. It was locals. But judging from their mood, and this guy, again, was not reading the room right, they were pissed, to say the least. He was not giving them answers. It's not even they want answers that they want to hear. It's they want to have answers that make sense. Okay, it doesn't make sense to sit there and go, well, you know, we're not going to keep pushing it because, you know, it's just going to get vetoed and it's kind of a waste of our time. And blah. And people started jumping on, why are you not going dogged after this guy? Why are you not hitting them every chance you get? My other point on that one, too, is because he said, well, you know, we could hand it to Tony Evers. He's just going to veto it. And it's like, well, let him then. But if he does, how come you're not all over everywhere, every bit of internet access you can get, if you can get on any mainstream media outlet, which is doubtful considering their bent, but you make him own it. You make Tony Evers and the communists that they're in this state, you make them own it. You make them eat their own words. They don't do that. They have no attack plan whatsoever to go after the communist movement that's infecting this country right now. And it's driving me nuts. And, you know, he did the very typical thing as a politician. And I don't know, maybe they go to acting school, you know, politician acting school for this coming out. Nice suit and tie, hair all done up, you know, dyed. You know, at least it looked like it was a dye job. And then, you know, comes up there with the big smile. How's everybody doing tonight? Well, we're pissed. How does that grab you? Well, that's great to hear from you. Once again, not reading the room. So my takeaway on that whole little bit tonight was just, seriously, we've got to do better than this. You know, I want to see people in our government who are going to not just sit there and, well, you know, because I've seen it before. I saw it in California, too, believe it or not. Yeah, go figure, California, right? When we kind of pigeonholed one of the board of supervisors for LA County when he was running for state senator. I guess he just didn't want to be on the board of supervisors or he wanted to retire and somebody convinced him to run, which was a mistake. But he was asked about, because the county board of supervisors in Los Angeles controls the registrar's office. They make the rules for the registrar's office and a whole bunch of other things. And they had no provision in the county charter to remove dead voters off the voting rolls. None. Zero. There was no time frame involved in it. And, of course, they weren't doing it because, you know, the Democrats need the dead to vote. I don't know that so much in L.A. because they outnumber Republicans by vast amount. But they do it anyway. So he was asked, after giving this little stump speech about, you know how you get things done, you know, after all my years in office, you know, I found out how to get things done is you never give up and you keep on pushing for it. So he was asked very simply, add three words to the county charter that says the registrar has to remove dead voters. And this is where the three words are, within 30 days. Just add within 30 days to the charter. I can't do it. We're, you know, the Democrats won't go for it, and they outnumber us 3-2. It's like, well, can't you even try? Well, you know, I would, but, you know, it's not going to do anything. Yeah, but can't you even try? Well, you know, I can't, you know. And that's what this guy tonight reminded me of was county board supervisor Mike Antonovich is the guy I was talking about. This is what this guy, Dave Murphy, reminded me of tonight. Is like when people were saying, can't you just get in there and keep pushing the issue? Yeah, you know, I could, but, you know, what would be the point? Because we need to keep this issue on the front burner. Yeah, but, you know, it's just going to get vetoed. And then, so, yeah, but can't you keep just getting it in there? Can't you keep digging at him with it? Yeah, well, you know, it's just not going to. It's like, shut up. Shut the F up, you worthless hack. If that's going to be your attitude. That point just came across to me as just another jackhole looking at his position in the assembly and not really wanting to accomplish anything. And none of them want to accomplish anything when it comes to election integrity. Zero, nada, zip, none. It's all done to them. Can't we move on and move past it and just get on to the midterms? And it's like, how about no? Because now I really don't trust the election system at all. Zero, nada. And I trust no politicians whatsoever. Not that I ever really had much faith in them or trust in them to begin with, but now I really don't, because this is the kind of answers that we're getting from them. You guys really don't understand how the system works. How about bucking the system for a change, like Marjorie Taylor Greene does, and putting some of these people in their place? No, we can't do that because, you know, we've got a career to think about, apparently. But if you want to get, see if I got the right one here. If you want to get a kind of an idea of what the debate between Tony Evers and Tim Michaels was, and Tim Michaels is the GOP nomination for governor in Wisconsin, and Tony Evers is a communist scumbag who is the current governor of Wisconsin. This is why Tim Michaels probably should not have been got the nomination, but he did. We're stuck with it, and now all these other mealy-mouthed people are out there. Well, you know, we supported Tim Rampton, who was actually the decent candidate that was running, but he didn't get through and whatever. So, well, but now we have to get behind the Republican candidate. I'm like, why? What for? I wasn't going to back in California. I wasn't going to get behind Neil Cash Carey, that Federal Reserve banker scumbag who derailed Tim Donnelly's campaign. You expect me to vote for him just because he's got an R after his name? What are you, effing high? No. Well, here's basically this is what my takeaway from the debate was, and it had me banging my head against the wall. You got to take a listen to this.
Question, and thanks to the broadcasters for inviting us today and making this happen.
Yeah, thank you for hosting this tonight, WBA, and thank you for the panelists. Yes, Ken, thank you for the question. Yes, Victor, thank you for the question. But yes, Frederica, thank you for the question. Yes, great question, and thank you for allowing me to clear this up a little bit.
Well, thank you so much for that question. And
yes, thank you for that question. Yeah, thank you for that question. So, yes, Amy, thank you. That's a great question. And yes, Frederica, thank you for the question. And thank you for that question. And thank you very much for this question. Yes, Amy, thank you for the question. Thank you, Dr. Harris. Great question. Yes, thank you, Frederica. Great question. So, yes, thank you for that question, Victor. Yeah, Dan, thank you for this opportunity.
By the way, there were no repeats in that entire segment at all. I went through that hour-long debate, and I cut out every one of those. There was no repeats. Those were all different ones, and they all sounded exactly the same. Gee, thank you. Why are you thanking these people for the questions? Maybe you thank them one time at the beginning like they did. Oh, you know, thanks for hosting the debate tonight, and I look forward to whatever, you know, and whatever your little spiel there is. But why do you got to thank them before every single – who is Tim Michaels' prep guy for the debates? You ought to fire him on the spot, because if that was like a Hollywood agent or a Hollywood manager prepping their client, you know, their actor client for an audition, and they went in and they pulled something like that, it would have been like, you are so fired, it's unbelievable. You're never going to get can get an acting job like that. And that's all politics really is. It's just a bunch of acting jobs and them telling you how great they are so that they can turn around and screw you up the ass later on. Oh, did I say a bad thing? Oh, well, isn't that too bad? But that was it. I had to watch this thing because I got to bring it up. You know, I do the dirty work, so you don't have to listen to any of it. And I was beating my head against the wall every time. And thank you for that question. It's like, shut up. Just let me smack you in the head. This was the wrong guy to pick. I mean, we got a crappy-ass governor, and good riddance to him when he loses. But it's not like we're getting anything better coming in. And this is, again, I'm sick of these politicians. I'm sick of all of them. But they did come up with one part, and this is worth listening to. This is part of the debate where they got onto gun control, which, of course, as anybody knows who listens to my show, it's kind of a near and dear to my heart thing, and I will always keep bringing it up and show you exactly how much they are trying to screw you on your constitutional rights. And believe me, if you don't have any Second Amendment rights and they say, we're taking all your guns, well, we've seen what happens when that happens many, many times, many different countries, and somewhere between 150 to 200 million people exterminated at the hands of their own government throughout the 20th century. We don't want to add the United States of America to that list. But so here's the part where they were yakking about gun control, red flag gun laws. Oh, my God, the proliferation of guns and all of that. And of course, the whole debate can be really summarized in very simple terms. They each pulled the party line. That was it. That's all they did was they spouted the party line. Yes, Tony Evers wants to take your guns and wants red flag gun laws. Tim Michaels doesn't. They barely mentioned the Constitution in it, although Tim Michaels did touch on it, which I'll give him a little bit of credit for. But go ahead and take a listen to it yourself. Make your own decisions on it. If you happen to be a Wisconsin listener and you didn't catch the debate, this would probably be the one issue you would really, really want to get in on.
Governor Evers, the Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service in an article this fall reported that the Milwaukee Police Department seized 8,076 guns from January 1st, 2020 to July 8th, 2022. Nearly half of those firearms came from several neighborhoods with Northside zip codes. Given the adage, so goes Milwaukee, so goes the state, how would you curb the presence of illegal firearms in the state?
Well, there's several things we have to do, but I'm going to go back to shared revenue, because in order for those great people that work in the city of Milwaukee.
Yeah, oops, I didn't want to answer this question because I didn't get to finish answering my last question. So you have to suffer through this part where Tony Evers is. I'm still talking about the last thing.
To do their work, they need the support financially from the state, whether it's issues about training or any other things that are going on in the city of Wisconsin, the city of Madison. That said, shared revenue will be increased by this administration. In addition, I am somebody that actually believes that we have some really thoughtful things that we can do around guns, and universal background checks are one, red flag laws are another. Time and time again, when the Marquette University poll talked about this and asked the questions, 70-80% of the people of Wisconsin said these are reasonable things we can do to provide safety in that arena. So let's do that. Let's bring people together. Let's have this discussion, and let's make some changes in Wisconsin.
Mr. Michaels, your response about the abundance of guns.
Okay, before we get on to Tim Michaels, I got to touch on what this idiot said. Number one, 70 to 80% of the respondents to it said, yes, these are common sense measures that we should take. Where did they make this poll from? Madison, you know, a hotbed of liberalism in Wisconsin. Milwaukee, another hotbed of liberalism in Wisconsin. By the way, both cities are pretty corrupt as it is. So I'd like to know, where did they poll? I never got a call. Did they talk out or did they reach out to any of the rural areas? Which, Wisconsin is massively rural. If you ever look at a map of Wisconsin, there are five major cities and the rest of it's pretty much farmland. And there's a couple others, big, bigger cities up in mid Wisconsin and off to the west next to Minneapolis, but before you cross the state line. But for the most part, Wisconsin is a massively rural state. Lots and lots and lots of farmland that Bill Gates is like drooling over buying up. So did they reach out to any of these people who live out there where, you know, guns are not a method of creating havoc, but a tool that you use, number one, to feed your family, two, self-defense, three, to keep the critters off of your out of your farm so that you have the food to eat. And yes, that happens and it's necessary. Did he ask any of the farmers, you know, do you think their red flag gun laws are a good idea? Number one, they didn't notice Tony never even bothered to mention the Constitution and the three amendments in the Bill of Rights that it violates, the second, the fourth, and the fifth. I guess that probably just went over his head, so we'll just skip over that part. But yeah, it's a good idea. So that's the dip that's running Wisconsin at the moment. So this is Tim Michaels' response to it.
Yes, Ken, thank you for the question about crime, specifically in Milwaukee, but all across the state, crime is running rampant. And guns, I have a solution for that. But let's talk about crime in Milwaukee. I've spent a lot of time in the inner city in Milwaukee. People tell me, like, Tim, why are you spending time in the near north side or the south side of Milwaukee? And I say, because I'm going to be a governor for all. Milwaukee is not the problem. Milwaukee has a problem, and I'm going to fix it. We're going to get crime down, and we're going to get education scores up to provide opportunity for the young men and women that have no option but to be on the streets. Guns are everywhere. I'll tell you, I was up in Wausau this week, and I spoke with officials at the Marathon County Sheriff's Department. They told me that 75% of recent homicides were stabbings. Those weren't gun violence. It was knife violence. The left always just wants to take away guns and thinks that's the problem. I'm a responsible gun owner. I will protect your Second Amendment rights.
Thank you. There is a follow-up question from Dr. Ken.
Mr. Michaels, in that same area, 19 states have red flag laws. Universal background check proposals did not make it out of legislative committee. What is your stance on the use of extreme risk protection orders and universal background checks?
Yeah, I'd like to explain for people at home red flag laws. So here's a hypothetical example. A disgruntled ex could say, my ex, who's a hunter, has some weapons at home, and I'm afraid of that. And without due process, those guns could be confiscated. That's unconstitutional, first of all. And it's also a slippery slope. We need to make sure that we uphold the Constitution and that law-abiding gun owners are not having their guns confiscated. I will be there for responsible gun owners. We're going to have 600,000 deer hunters hit the woods in a few weeks. I'll be one of them. I love deer camp. But with the millions of guns in Wisconsin, we need to make sure that the responsible gun owners are not going to become subject to having their guns taken away without due process, because they have rights and our Constitution here is at stake.
Governor Evers, your response on red flag laws and universal background checks.
Of course, I have supported both of those. They are reasonable things. Marquette University polls on this issue many, many times. It's always 70% to 80% of I have to say, responsible gun owners don't have to worry about red flag laws because it'll never be an issue for them.
Wrong! Tony Evers was the superintendent of the Department of Public Instruction, the education system, and he obviously has never read a real history book in his life. You know, in red flag gun laws, if you got nothing, it's that same thing. If you got nothing to hide, you got nothing to worry about. Wrong. How many times have we seen, especially with the FBI and the ATF, making up new rules as they go along? We know that the FBI is now essentially the new Stasi in this country. They are a political arm of the Democratic Party, an enforcement arm. The ATF is they're like the Gestapo at this point. We just make stuff up as we want. They've got people who they can coerce into saying, yes, we saw this happen and that happened. And so, yes, okay, red flag that guy and take away his firearms. That guy is so full of shit. It's unbelievable. And this is our governor, by the way. If you're a law-abiding gun owner and you're responsible, you got nothing to worry about. No, the law-abiding and the responsible have everything to worry about. I don't know if Tony Evers knows anything about background checks, but if you go to an FFL and you buy a gun, you got to fill out the 4473, you know, that form that Hunter Biden lied on and never got busted for. And you fill that out, and they are very meticulous about how you do it. You write your name this way. You write your address this way. You do not skip over the lines. You fill it in the little boxes where you have to fill it out. You write the letters like this. All the I's dotted and the T's crossed. You know, it is a meticulous form. You screw it up, you start over again. Then they run that thing through the background check. You do get background check when you go buy a firearm through the FFL. That's a very important point. Because here's the thing that Tony Evers doesn't seem to understand about universal background checks is criminals don't use them. They don't go to the FFLs to get their guns and ammo. They find other ways to do it. And yet, the crime rates are going up. Why? Because we've got these Soros-backed dipshit DAs who won't prosecute any of the violent crimes, and they're letting a lot of people out of jail. One of the points that was brought up tonight at the meeting was the fact that they were letting people out of jail. And they have this organization out there, something called Wisdom, and this other one under this umbrella group, Wisdom, that are trying to half the population of prison inmates in Wisconsin. They want to get 11,000 people out of jail. I was just like, man, you guys are amateurs compared to California. Newsom's letting 76 or 78,000 of them out. We got more people being let out of prison in California than you got in your entire population in Wisconsin. But they won't prosecute them. Oh, and there's always the plea bargain one, guys, too. We got plea bargain down to a real lesser crime, but, you know, all the major crimes that they committed are pretty much swept under the rug. We can just ignore that. So Evers is an idiot. Okay, he always was. I mean, he's a controlled puppet also. So, yeah, we go through universal background checks there, brainiac. Red flag gun laws violate your Second Amendment rights, you know, the right to keep and bear arms. Fourth Amendment rights, you have the right to a warrant. And your Fifth Amendment rights, the right to due process. At least Tim Michaels brought that up, although he did miss the Fourth Amendment part of it. But he supports him because, you know, polling shows, you know, and of course, nobody bothered to follow up a question with, well, who was polled? So Evers is a moron. These are our choices here. We got it's. I don't want to say it's a complete disaster because Tim Michaels doesn't have any kind of a real track record at this point. And again, this is just Wisconsin. I mean, you apply this to all your other states out there in the lower 48, plus Hawaii and Alaska, and take a look at who's running for what, and really take a look at them and see what they're doing. Do they support gun control? Yeah, they're not your guy or gal, depending on who's running for governor. But this is just the whole local thing here. It's effing ridiculous, man. The choices that we're being given. Believe me, we are being given these choices. We're not selecting these people ourselves or electing them ourselves. They're being tossed in our face and saying, hey, "This is what you got. You got the chocolate ice cream, or you got the other chocolate ice cream." Well, I'll go with the other chocolate ice cream because if I don't eat the other chocolate ice cream, then the chocolate ice cream is gonna kind of win. Whatever, you know, however, whatever analogy that you want to make, we're screwed. And again, listening to Mr. Assemblyman tonight, it's like I don't foresee anything getting better in the near future. We know our election system's not going to be fixed anytime soon. Hopefully, the guy I had on last week, Mr. Dean Newbert, out of the 6th Assembly District up here, is running as a write-in. Maybe he'll take it. That would be nice. He seems like a pretty good, at the very least, he's not coming from and coming in as an insider and has some pretty good ideas. Hopefully, maybe Adam Steen, who's running against the president scumbag incumbent Robin Voss, Speaker of the Assembly, who basically wants to screw Wisconsin in favor of himself. Hopefully, Adam Steen, he's running as a writing candidate down in the 63rd. So anybody down in the 63rd listening, if you can hear us, write in Adam Steen and get rid of Robin Voss. Do Wisconsin a solid, please. But that was just that whole thing for tonight, you know, and it just makes you just want to smack the hell out of somebody having to listen to some of this stuff. I'm going to run this other thing out because I wanted to get to this last week, but I wasn't able to. This is a video called The Jones Plantation, and it's all about how changing words, people try to change the reality of a situation when the reality of the situation is that it doesn't change. Situation stays the same. You're just calling it something different. It's kind of like what we're watching now. And when they start changing the meanings of words, like man means woman now and woman means man. And, you know, my pronouns are they, them, which is plural. And that means you're two people and you can't be. It's a physical impossibility. And I'm gender non-binary. Guess what? Yes, you are. Or no, you're not. Excuse me. But I'm a woman and I can have kids. No, you can't. But it's worth, this is another one worth taking. Like I said, I wanted to get to this last week, but I had Dean on and we got a nice good 2-hour talk in. So just take a listen to it. Listen to what it says and listen to how words are being changed. It's like the Newspeak Dictionary in 1984. They're changing the meanings of words and then they're getting rid of other words. So that at some point you simply will not have the ability to even think about questioning your government because there won't be any words to exist where you can question your government.
Mr. Jones owned a cotton plantation and many slaves. One day he was talking to the owner of the plantation next to his, and Mr. Jones was lamenting the fact that times were tough. He was having to work his slaves harder than ever and was having trouble with some of them being disobedient or trying to run away. The other plantation owner said he knew someone who could help.
Day one.
One day, Mr. Jones called his slaves together so a man named Mr. Smith could talk to them. Before beginning, Mr. Smith whispered to Mr. Jones, "Whatever I say, do not contradict me or interfere, and I promise you your slave troubles will end." "My name is Mr. Smith," he said to the slaves. "And this may be the happiest day of your lives. From today forward, you will no longer be slaves, but free men." Mr. Jones was so shocked, he started to step forward, but Mr. Smith gestured for him to remain silent. He did, only because the other plantation owner had spoken so highly of Mr. Smith's skills. "You are no longer the property of Mr. Jones," Mr. Smith continued. "You are free. No more would you be forced to labor for the benefit of Mr. Jones. Now you can work for yourselves." Now the slaves were all murmuring and looking at each other. Many were smiling, many were looking puzzled. "In fact, you are now free to leave the plantation whenever you want," Mr. Smith said. "However, since we are surrounded by other plantations, if you leave, some other plantation owner will likely claim you as his own the moment you set foot on his property. So I urge you not to risk your newfound freedom by doing something so foolish. Instead, I suggest that you stay here, no longer as slaves, but as willing participants and part owners of this plantation. Yes, this is now your plantation." Mr. Jones bit his tongue to keep from objecting. "For now, we might as well leave Mr. Jones in charge," said Mr. Smith, "since he is the only one with any experience at running a plantation, which is quite a complicated thing to manage. But he will no longer be your master, but just another worker on the plantation. In fact, he will now be using his organizational and management skills to serve you. Whatever problems you may have had with him before, you are now all equals. And you need each other to make this work. If we all cooperate and work together, we can all reap the benefits together. In honor of this happy occasion, I present you this new symbol of togetherness and cooperation, this flag, which shall be the emblem of the new free Jones Plantation. He held up the new flag, but most of those listening were still too amazed to respond. And this shall be our motto, Mr. Smith announced. We work together as free men for our mutual benefit, pledging our allegiance to the Jones Plantation, which stands for prosperity, liberty, and justice for all. To celebrate, everyone has the rest of the day off. Enjoy your freedom, do as you please, and be back here tomorrow morning, bright and early, so that we may begin work on this great and noble new endeavor as equal free men. Finally convinced that Mr. Smith was serious, the former slaves applauded and cheered.
Day two.
We all want this plantation to do well, Mr. Smith said at the beginning of the next meeting, so we can all share the benefits. We all know that it takes a lot of effort to make a cotton plantation work. Just because you're all free doesn't mean you can stop working. In fact, since you're now working for yourselves, I expect you to work even harder than ever before, but now with pride and joy, knowing that you're working for yourselves. Of course, there still have to be rules. If everyone just does whatever he wants, the plantation won't produce anything. This experiment will fail and we'll all starve. You should be thankful that Mr. Jones has agreed to stay on to lend his knowledge and skills to this endeavor, and I trust you will all do your own part to make this work. Several of you have been chosen to act as project supervisors, to manage different aspects of the operation, to make sure everyone is doing his assigned job, to make sure that the rules are followed, and so on. The rest of you may head out to the fields to start your first day of work as free men.
Day three.
The next morning, Mr. Smith had a grim expression on his face as the daily meeting began. I have an unpleasant duty to do today, he said. Yesterday, Charles was caught keeping some of the cotton he picked, presumably to sell for his own personal profit. That is against the rules. That is stealing. For that, Charles must be punished. Two men tied Charles to the whipping post. I take no joy in this, Mr. Smith continued, but you must understand, if we do not maintain order, if we do not have rules that we all abide by, then the plantation will fail, and we will all suffer. The whip cracked against Charles' back. But if we all pitch in for the common good, then we can all prosper. Being free doesn't mean you should be selfish and greedy. We must each do our assigned duties and obey the rules, and then we can all benefit, and each of you will receive your appropriate share of the profits. A young man named Samuel stepped forward. But if you and Mr. Jones decide the rules and whip us if we disobey, how is that any different from what we had before? How can you say that? Mr. Smith asked. I'm shocked. You were a slave before, and now you're free. Things still need to be managed and organized by those best qualified to do so. Do you know how to run a plantation, Samuel?
Well, no, he answered. But if we're free, why do we get no say in what the rules are and how things work?
I'm surprised at your ingratitude, Mr. Smith answered. None of you know how a plantation is run, so you're in no position to be making decisions about how things are done here. You don't seem to appreciate all the things that Mr. Jones provides for you, from protecting you from all the outside threats that you know nothing about, those who would come here capture and enslave you, if not for Mr. Jones' protection, to making sure that you all have food and housing, tools to work with, that you're cared for when sick and injured, and so on. There wouldn't be a plantation at all, no cotton to pick, no land to plant and harvest, if not for him. You should be grateful that he's made possible the level of comfort you now have. Your lives would be far worse if not for him. Nevertheless, as free and equal participants in this endeavor, from now on at each meeting, any worker may have 2 minutes to ask questions or voice suggestions or complaints. With that, the workers all seemed satisfied and headed out again to the fields to pick the cotton.
Day four.
I have a big announcement, Mr. Smith said as the daily meeting began. Mr. Jones' cousin is here, and not just to visit and see how our project is coming along. It has been decided that from now on, you will be deciding who will manage the plantation. Of course, this job can't be done by just anyone, but every 3 months we will have a special meeting at which all the workers will vote on whether we think Mr. Jones should run the plantation or whether we think his cousin, Mr. Johnson, should run the plantation. That means that ultimately you are in charge because you will be deciding which man you want running things on your behalf. If you don't like the way things are being managed, you now have the power to change it. Amazed and pleased, the workers headed out again to the fields to pick the cotton. Days passed, months passed, a year passed, and the plantation continued to operate as before.
Sometimes Mr. Jones was in charge, sometimes Mr. Johnson was in charge, but the day-to-day routine stayed exactly the same. The workers worked hard, long hours every day, and still had little to show for it. Every day the meeting would begin with them all reciting the Jones Plantation motto, "We work together as free men for our mutual benefit, pledging our allegiance to the Jones Plantation, which stands for prosperity, liberty, and justice for all." One day, Mr. Smith announced, "Samuel is asked to say a few words this morning, and whatever the rest of us may think of his ideas and opinions, we are all free here, and that means we are all allowed to speak our minds. So, Samuel, you have 2 minutes. Begin." Samuel stepped forward, looking scared. "I was excited when all this started," he began, glancing nervously at Mr. Smith and Mr. Jones. "But don't you all see what's happened here? Nothing's changed. We're all still slaves." There were grumbles of disagreement from the crowd. "They tell us what to do and whip us if we don't. They still make all the rules and punish us if we disobey. They let us make suggestions and complain about things, but they never really change anything. They let us choose between Mr. Jones and Mr. Johnson, but what's the difference? The situation stays the same. We do all of the work and they take as much as they want and decide how much they'll let us keep. They live in luxury made rich by the cotton we pick. We do all the work and have to build our own huts, grow our own food, and take care of ourselves. They leave us just enough that we don't revolt or run away. This is not freedom. We're all still slaves. They've only changed the words they use, but nothing else has changed. They say we're all free and equal, but we're not. They command and we obey. That's not freedom. That's not equality. They say we're free to leave, but all that means is that we're free to be someone else's slave. Why should we work or obey the rules? We didn't agree to this. They made the system. They forced it on us. They control and rob us and call it freedom."
All right, I'm going to finish. I've got a couple minutes left on that. I'll finish it up on the second half of the show there. But is any of this sounding familiar? Is any of this sounding familiar? You got to pick from one. You got to pick one or the other. You know, there is no other alternative. And remember, it's all on you guys because you gave them the job. You voted for him. Gee, I wonder what that sounds like. Anyway, we'll be right back after the break, everybody, so stay tuned.
It's no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is advanced ancient global civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
All right, welcome back to the show, everybody. This is For Liberty. I am your host, Nick, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, iTunes, Zeno.fm, Roku TV, TuneIn, and of course a whole bunch of others that I don't know because I never write any of them down. My excuse is that my pen ran out of ink. I don't have any paper. I got lost in traffic. It's not my fault. Be sure to go to the homepage and check out the chat room. Click that little join button down at the bottom of the chat room that you see. Sign up on Element. Get in there. Toss ideas around with everybody else that's in there. It's always a pretty good time. And check out the advertising spots. If you see something you like, pick it up. I like Extendivite myself. Or if you got something for sale, pick up one of the advertising spots that's on there that's available. It's relatively cheap compared to everywhere else. Not even relatively cheap. It actually is pretty cheap compared to everywhere else. Either way, it helps keep us on the air. And as always, if you have some change burning a hole in your pocket, you find it between the cushions of your couch, under the seat of your car, under your bed, in the crack of the wall, or if you happen to have the misfortune of walking down the streets of L.A., please move the needles away with some sticks. Don't touch them yourself. Disinfect it, wash the feces off of it, wash the urine off of it. Before you hit that button, that donation button up at the top of the page, and send it our way, we are 100% listener supported, and we need all the help we can get to keep us on the air. We don't get tons of money like CNN. Well, then again, CNN's not getting tons of money anymore either. I just heard that they're axing another one. Jim Acosta will soon be hitting the bricks of the unemployment line, wondering where he's going to get his next job. I'm pretty sure that since they hired Brian Stelter over at Harvard, he's probably going to get a call from Yale saying, hey, we got a spot open here too. So they're getting, you don't have to feel bad for them. They're going to get their thing. Or maybe Jim Acosta will just go into the profession of smacking around White House interns as a living. Who knows? But I want to get back to the rest of that video, the Jones Plantation. Like I said before the break, it all sounds pretty familiar, doesn't it? You get to choose this guy or you get to choose that guy who are both part of the same family. Meanwhile, your life hasn't changed at all. But they promise you things will get better because now you're free. But don't you dare step off the plantation. That's the key. That's the real key to this whole story here is don't step off the plantation. So enjoy the rest of it.
They've deceived you into thinking that being able to choose which slave master you'll work for is the same as being free. It's not. Open your eyes. If you keep what you produce, they call it stealing. When they take what you produce, they call it sharing and fair distribution. Can't you see that this is all your time is up, Samuel? Mr. Smith announced calmly. At his gesture, two supervisors grabbed Samuel by the arms and led him to the whipping post. I'm sorry, Samuel, but you've broken the rules. There are rules against encouraging others not to work and encouraging others to break the rules. You're only hurting all of us with your discontentment and your complaining and your disobedience. The whip fell, and Samuel let out a grunt. Without rules, without order, all would be lost. Without law, there would be chaos. We can't just behave as wild animals, each doing whatever he pleases. We must all follow the plan and all do our duty for the betterment of everyone. And those who do not must be punished. The whip fell again, and blood flowed freely from Samuel's back. Samuel, it is you who are stealing from the others. When you don't do your assigned work, you are making more work for others. When you disobey the rules, it is you who are endangering the future of everyone else here. You are the thief. You are the criminal. You are the one trying to destroy the arrangement that keeps us all safe and prosperous. At every lash of the whip, the other workers cheered louder and louder, some yelling curses at Samuel. Being spoiled and selfish, you complain about everything, talking as if you're oppressed. But you are the one ruining things. You are the one keeping us from being all we could be. It is your greed and your rebelliousness that is hurting all of us. They all play by the rules, Mr. Smith said, gesturing at the others. What makes you think that you don't have to? You think you're above the law? There were loud yells of agreement as the whip fell again. We must maintain order, Mr. Smith proclaimed, to make this plantation great, to make it so that we can all be happy and prosperous. To have the society we want, there have to be rules. We all have to contribute our fair share to this great endeavor, and we cannot tolerate actions and attitudes that seek to undermine the amazing things that together as free men we have achieved and will continue to achieve. Mr. Jones was smiling as he gave Mr. Smith a pat on the back. The crowd was cheering so loudly that none of them had noticed that Samuel had died.
Gee, sound familiar? Again, once again. We see this every day in this country, and we hear the same things every day from our elected officials, like the one I was had the privy of listening to tonight and seeing in person. We got these are the rules that we got. We have to play by them. Well, why? The rules ain't working. I hate to break the news to you. The rules ain't working. We get rules from the Federal Reserve. This is how our money supply is supposed to be working. It's not working. This is why we're $31 trillion in debt. Reality of it. And by the way, somebody brought this up, too, when it came to monetary policy to this guy when he asked about the started saying, we're $31 trillion in debt. And somebody said, yeah, well, what about the unfunded mandates? Oh, well, the unfunded debts. Well, I don't want to talk about that. You know, that'd be too much. I can give you an idea because I've read articles from the people over at Mises, the economists who write for the their publication over there. We're like $250 trillion in debt and climbing. They don't want to address that. They don't ever want to address the Federal Reserve. You know, the Federal Reserve, they set the rules. And if you break the rules, you know, you get to the whipping post. You kept your gold in 1933. Well, you know, that's a crime. You got to go to jail. How dare you have any personal wealth of your own? You know, stealing. You're not paying your fair share of taxes. And you're stealing from the rest of everybody. So I'm really kind of not because we never used to have income taxes until the banking cartels got in there and screwed everybody. We didn't have an IRS. We didn't have an armed IRS until the banking cartels came in there and screwed everybody to enforce the theft of your property and your labor. And we didn't have a central bank for a long time after Andrew Jackson killed it. And we had a very prosperous nation because of it. You know, Civil War aside, even Abraham Lincoln was smart enough to not to go to bed with the bankers at 36% interest to finance the war. And then when they got the Fed in, guess what? We all started, and we watched our economy tank. We watched the valuation of our dollar tank and everything else. And the only president since 1913 to actually stand up to the Federal Reserve and put out a competing currency after they were decimating all the other ones. Got a quick drive through Dallas with the top down. That didn't last very long, did it? There are rules, and if you break them, you pay the price. And if you ever notice anything about the rules, most of them aren't even actual criminal acts against anybody else. They're not harming anybody. They're administrative rules. I didn't wear my seatbelt. You got to pay us. You got to pay us for not wearing your seatbelt. You broke the rules. I went a little over the speed limit. You got to pay us for breaking the rules. I don't want to be on this plantation anymore. Well, somebody else is going to enslave you then. Well, gee, I'm trading one off for the other. You got to pick from the Republican to the Democrat. I'm so sick of hearing this one. This is the damn worst argument you can ever make to me, period. And it should be for everybody else, too. You know, you live in another country. You guys got to deal with your own parties. Australia, I don't know how many Australia has. Hey, I've got like five or six or however many. And England's got a whole bunch of different ones. We have two major ones. All the third parties are relegated into obscurity. I mean, look at what happened with the Libertarian Party. Ron Paul invigorated the Libertarian Party. Got it going. Almost got a good name for itself. And then the Libertarian Party became the Libertarian Party. And I've interviewed some of them on my show, and you know they're good. I like Joe Jorgensen. I like Spike Cohen. I like Adam. You know, Adam versus the Man. And I like them, but the problem is that they're anarchy. They're so anarchic in their ideology that they just simply can't get their shit together, to put it bluntly, and they end up just like not doing anything. Joe, she got me all bent when, oh, we got to go march with Black Lives Matter because we believe in free speech. Hate to break the news to you, Joe, but Black Lives Matter doesn't. They're a communist front group. Just like Antifa. And I will not abide communists. I absolutely despise them. They all should be lined up against the wall and shot. Oh, gee, did I say that? Yes, I did. But I'm tired. The worst argument you can ever make to me is you got to choose from the Democrat Party or the Republican Party. And if you don't choose this guy, if you vote third party, well, then that's just a vote for the other guy, the other major party guy. And you sold us out and you vote. That's a vote for them. And you can't play with us anymore. It's like, okay, I don't want to play with you anymore. Guess what? This is why every time I go to one of these little events and everybody assumes, oh, you're a Republican. No, I'm not. You know why I'm not a Republican? Because of the Republicans. Okay, I was in the Republican Party in California for too long a time. I saw the crap that they were pulling, especially against us who were in the liberty movement. I saw who was getting paid. I saw all of this stuff. I don't want to have to rehash it all again, but I saw the whole corruption that was going on. I'm not a Republican. I go there because I want to see what people have to say. Democrats, I already know what they're going to say. You know, equity for everybody and transgenders are great because men can be women. And, you know, it's like that old Monty Python skit. I just want to have the right to have babies. Well, you can't. What the hell's the point? You know, watch Life of Brian. It's actually a pretty funny movie. But listening to this whole thing, the Jones Plantation analogy here, it's exactly what we're going through in this country. You know, they give you the illusion that you're free. They give you the illusion that because you get to pick your own leaders, that somehow that makes you even freer. Yet the rules never change. They're always against you. Yeah, and then they come out at election time. Hey, you know, you got to pick one of us, and I'm the guy who's going to help you. I actually saw a sign driving down the road on my way to this event today, and it said, vote for the Democrats because they vote for you. What a most ignorant effing statement I've heard in a long time. They could say the same thing about Republicans, and I would think the same thing. Vote for the Republicans because they vote for you. No, they don't. Neither one of them does. If they wanted to vote for me, vote to get rid of the Federal Reserve Bank. Vote to get rid of the ATF. Vote to get rid of the Department of Education. vote to get rid of almost every single federal bureaucracy that's out there that is sucking up our dollars, screwing everybody over at the same time, making regulations that have the full enforcement of law because the judges will back it. Vote to put some of these people in prison. You want, you know, Mr. Johnson, you know, Mr. Ron Johnson, you want to hold people accountable, like you said. Vote, get these people put in jail because that's the only thing that's going to satisfy me. It should be the only thing that's going to satisfy you, too. And like the illustrious assemblyman said, well, you know, we can't bring up charges. And, of course, it was explained to him how you can, but that went right over his head. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this clip I just played, I mean, that's just another analogy. I don't know how many different ways I have to keep explaining this to people. How many different ways there are. You can explain it 1,000 different ways. You can use fables. You can use analogies. You can use whatever you want. You can hit them with the direct truth. And some people just still aren't going to get it. Now, I'm free because I live in America. Yeah, we would be free if they actually used the Constitution. Here's the clue. They're not using it anymore. One of the ways, here was I looking at, okay, one of the ways we can, by the way, grab some of our freedom back, some of our liberty, is to stop enforcing the rules. Not the people, you know, the police and the politicians and the bureaucracy, the, you know, the alphabet agencies, they're going to enforce them all they want to. But they still got to go through the court system sometimes. Of course, they're kind of moving out of that whole thing when a judge can simply adjudicate you guilty regardless of your request for a trial by jury. By the way, that's another thing. Never ask for a jury trial. Ask for a trial by jury. It's a world of difference. And if you know what the difference is, well, if you don't know what the difference is, you're probably going to find out pretty fast. Jury trial, the judge can adjudicate you guilty without the benefit of a jury. Trial by jury, well, that's your saving grace. But one of the things that we can do, which we should be doing on a regular basis when we get into the court, when you're sitting in that jury box, if you get selected to sit in the jury of 12 at the trial, and they bring somebody up on a law that makes absolutely no sense, but it's the law. And as the judge told me one time, you know, do you have a problem taking understanding the law as I give it to you? My hand always goes up and says, yes, I do. I don't want you to give me the law. I want to read it for myself. Give me a copy of it. That doesn't always go over well, and I never sit on a jury. Funny thing, too. Here's one that'll crack you up, too. Just on a little side note. I've lived in Wisconsin for the last 6 years, almost 6 years. I got a jury summons from Los Angeles County. This is how efficient our government is. They don't realize that I haven't lived there for the last 6 years. I go back there occasionally. I don't live there. I got nothing to do with what happens in Los Angeles now except to watch it basically implode on itself. But back on track here, one of the things that we can do is if you do happen to be sitting on a jury and the law that they're presenting the charges against the defendant with make no sense, if some stupid bullshit administrative law, like, oh my God, he didn't pay this taxes or he didn't pay this fine for, you know, he did this thing that nobody got hurt, nobody cost nobody any money, but it just, we have this administrative part of it that makes us feel better and we get to steal some of his stuff. There's a really great remedy for that, and it's called nullification. Don't find them guilty. And you get pressured by the people on the jury, so just sit there and say no, and here's the reasons why. And I will not change my mind. Now, they might get you removed, and there's nothing you can do about that. But like if somebody was carrying a gun here in Wisconsin, you know, we do have open carry laws here. You are allowed to. If you carry concealed, well, that's a crime. without a license, which, by the way, makes no sense considering that's in violation of the Constitution. Somebody goes up in front of a trial and goes into trial on the charge of carrying concealed without a license. You, as a juror, can sit there and go, he's not guilty because the Constitution says we have the right to keep and bear arms, and the licensing process to exercise that right is in violation of the Constitution. Guess what? Done. Nullify the damn laws that don't make any sense, that are in violation of the Constitution, by simply finding, and if you get that opportunity, simply finding people not guilty of breaking a stupid law that doesn't, should not exist because it's a violation of the Constitution anyway. Supreme Court said Constitution is the supreme law of the land. That's wholly recognized, except for the fact that our government, our federal government especially, does not follow the Constitution anymore. But John Birch Society, by the way, a really good organization. I wish they had a little bit better of a game plan going, because I've met these guys. I was a member of the John Birch. I really kind of got to get hooked back up with them again and see what's going on. But they put out a pretty cool video. It's only a couple of minutes long. It's called Nullification Versus a Constitutional Convention. By the way, I know all these people are out there really hot for getting a constitutional convention, saying we can just add these amendments and then everything will be cool again because then we can make the government obey. If they're not obeying the Constitution now the way it's written, they're not going to. 10th Amendment specifically says that the federal government cannot do anything outside the provisions in the Constitution. That's not stopping them. So what the hell difference is adding an amendment going to do? Okay, no, our job is to hold them accountable, hopefully. I'm starting to get a little worn on that term, too, because all these politicians keep using it, but then they don't actually do anything. Well, you know, I got them up in a hearing, and that was holding them accountable. It's like, no, it's not. We're marching them off to jail in shackles with a 100-pound weight and then putting them on a boat out into the middle of the Pacific Ocean or Atlantic Ocean and dropping them over the side. That's called being held accountable. So you don't want a constitutional convention. A constitutional convention, I've seen how some of these meetings go. We're going to do is add these amendments to the Constitution until somebody says, let's suspend the rules, get seconded. Everybody says aye because they're a bunch of plants. And by the way, with the way things are now, who do you think is going to be at that constitutional convention? You think it's going to be a bunch of constitutional-loving patriots? Do you really? Go back to the Jones Plantation and see what happens when somebody speaks up and when somebody else has a better way of speaking publicly and pretty much puts you in your place and everybody else goes along with it and suddenly you're no longer part of the process. The entire Constitution is on the table. It will be rewritten. It will be rewritten in a way specifically designed to benefit some and screw the rest of us. All the rights you thought you had, that you still have, by the way, because they're in unalienable rights, handed down by our Creator, but on paper they won't exist anymore, and then these people will go in there and enforce you not having any more rights. But this is I know I get a little long-winded on some of these things, but man, I swear to God, I really wish I had like a punching bag or something, because I need to work off some of this. But by the way, if I get a punching bag, can it be like Nancy Pelosi hanging from a rope? Ooh, did I say that? Yes, I did. But by the way, if I say, since she said that about Donald Trump, I think turnaround is fair play. I get to say that about her, too. But so the John Birch Society put out this real quick video about nullification versus a con, and it's actually pretty good. Like I said, I really wish the JBS would get a higher profile and start hitting back harder than what they do. I mean, they're great and they're well researched and well spoken, and they write great articles which are really well researched as well. Their library is incredible. They just don't hit back hard enough right now. But so here it is.
1787. What an important year for America. At the time, its founders had no idea their experiment, the Constitution, would actually work and become the oldest constitution in use today. The founders even went one step further to ensure citizens their individual liberties would always be protected by adding 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights. However, as impressive as the Constitution has been, the federal government has been increasingly ignoring its constitutional boundaries over the last century. Today, Americans are realizing that the federal government is out of control and are looking for a way to rein it in. Some are advocating an Article 5 convention, also known as a convention of the states, a constitutional convention, or a CONCON, which provides a way to change the Constitution. Others are advocating nullification, which provides a way to enforce the Constitution. So what is the difference between nullification and an Article 5 convention? With nullification, the Constitution is left intact. With this tool, states can refuse to enforce unconstitutional federal laws. With a convention, the Constitution would be changed, either by a single amendment, a series of amendments, or possibly a complete rewrite that would destroy what our founders gave us. With nullification, responsibility rests with each state's elected legislature sitting as the authority. With a convention, responsibility rests with delegates appointed or elected from all 50 states. Currently, there is no way of knowing who your delegate would be. Let's think about this. How likely is it that most delegates would be constitutionally minded and looking out for the American people's best interests? With nullification, it is usually a short process because only one step is required by a state, not several steps as with a convention. With a convention, this would be a much longer process. It could take years by the time you choose delegates, have a convention for proposing amendments, and then ratifying those amendments by 3/4 of the states. As you can see, with nullification, the end is known. First, a bill is introduced in the state legislature invalidating an unconstitutional federal law within that state. Next, that bill is passed, rejected, or ignored. With a convention, the end is unknown. Such a convention would have the inherent power to be a runaway convention and completely rewrite the Constitution. So what do you feel more comfortable with? Americans are correct when they say our government is out of control and that something needs to be done. What many don't realize is that the Constitution is not the problem. It is our elected officials who are not obeying the Constitution. Changing the Constitution by means of an Article 5 convention will not fix this problem. However, tools such as nullification can be used to bring the federal government back within its constitutional boundaries. It is our duty as Americans to maintain our republic. We can do so through a citizen-based educational program that informs the electorate on the proper role of government. With an informed electorate, we can elect constitutionally minded individuals who obey the Constitution. It is time to get involved. We the people created the Constitution in 1787. Now we the people can preserve our freedom by enforcing the Constitution.
Okay, so I like what he said about, you know, explaining the difference between nullification and a constitutional convention, because they're pretty well good at. You can go into a hell of a lot more detail than what they did, but this was a very short video. The solution presented, however, I just want to say, in my opinion, it's naive as hell. We just need to educate people and then get constitutionally minded people elected. How has that worked out for us so far? Okay, our education system is a complete wreck. A lot of the meetings that I've been to where people will talk about things like this, you're not, I mean, unless it's like Turning Point or you know, Charlie Kirk's, one of his things or whatever, you don't get a lot of people that want to be educated about it. And even if you do, then they have to go back to either K-12 or college, and which they have them trapped for 8 hours a day or however, you know, in college, however many classes that they're taking. And they drill all this crap into their heads a lot more than you can at any given time. The education part of it, I think, you know, it's important, but it's not enough. This is where what I'm trying to say is that it's not enough to educate these people on what the reality of the situation, what our Constitution is. Getting constitutionally minded people elected. Look how many we have in Washington, D.C. right now. The guy, my congressman, he ran that way. I was like, I support the Constitution. I was in the Marine Corps and I worked in intelligence. And look at me. I can run faster than everybody else and whatever. And that guy is not only is a Council on Foreign Relations member, but he has done jack shit for people here in Wisconsin. Oh, he'll say otherwise. Well, I got some... a ship deal where the shipbuilders in Wisconsin get to build some ships for the Navy and whatever. Okay, great, wonderful, whatever. You haven't done dick. You stood against the border wall when Donald Trump needed it. You certified the 2020 elections in the face of fraud, and now we even know more and more about the fraud that occurred. He is not well liked. People hate him. But guess what? He's the Republican that he's the other guy. He's Mr. Jones's cousin or brother that we have to pick from between the people running, right? I mean, he's not 100% bad, but he's bad enough. I'm not going to be voting for him. You know, whatever. I'll write myself in. I'll get myself a congressional vote. I've had two of them in the last election. I got two votes from me. But nullification is I think, really the way to go. I think that their solutions on this just don't go far enough. We need to be a hell of a lot more aggressive than we are, because the people that are stripping us of our constitutionally guaranteed rights – not given rights, by the way, which a lot of people mistake, but our constitutionally guaranteed rights. They're not backing down. They are stripping. And they got these rhino Republicans that are going right along with it. So how many times are we going to be duped by this election system where we get to choose from Mr. Jones or Mr. Jones's brother? And meanwhile, everything for us keeps getting crappier and crappier. But as long as we work harder, you know, we can enjoy everything as well. And don't you dare speak up, because they'll put you on the whipping post and whip you till you die. And that's how that works. And, oh, by the way, in case any, you know, he talked about bills. In case anybody wanted to know how a bill becomes a law, it takes money. Number one, if you go in and you propose a bill and say, hey, Mr. Congressman, Mr. Senator, here's an idea for a bill. Here's how I've got it outlined and whatever. It's like, oh, thank you very much. That's very nice of you. It's very cute that you think that you can do that, and they'll circle, you know, put it in a circular file right away. And then they'll come in, they'll act like, you know, we want to hear from you, our constituents, and they don't want to hear from you at all. It's kind of an obligation that they have, but they don't want to listen to you. So they talk about putting in bills. Oh, you remember that old Schoolhouse Rock song? You know, I'm just a bill. Or, hold on.
Whew, you sure got to climb a lot of steps to get to this Capitol building here in Washington. Well, I wonder who that sad little scrap of paper is.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the capital city. It's a long, long wait while I'm sitting in committee. But I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill.
Yeah, and without a whole bunch of lobbyists funneling money to everybody, you're just going to stay a bill. I wonder if Bill Clinton ever figured, listen to that one. I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. Smoking cigars on Capitol Hill. Let's see. Got that one. Okay, now here's the one. Another one I wanted to get to. This is another one I wanted to get to last week, and I wasn't able to because... the interview with Dean Neubert, which, by the way, again, if you voting in the 6th Assembly District in Wisconsin and you're listening to the show, vote for Dean Newbert. Write him in. Fill in a little dot and write his name in. That would be another way to get people that we can't stand and think we have the only – they're the only choice we have. People need to start running as write-ins if they can't get past the primary process. Start putting some of these people – take them to task and make them have to answer to us for a change. But there's this article that's called Let 100 Flowers Bloom by a guy named Rob Henderson. You can find him, robkhenderson.substack.com. You know, got to give credit where credit is due. And it's a really good article about understanding the zigzags of politically correct opinion in communist regimes. Because if you ever study communist regimes, they always end up killing each other. They always end up killing people within the party themselves. And a lot of people that study Marxism and communism in college, and unfortunately there's too many that take it seriously and think it's the way to go, don't understand how this works. A lot of people who are scholars on it don't understand how it works. Why people are getting offed within the party when they've been nothing but majorly loyal supporters. Well, because that's the way it's designed. So this one starts off about a collection of essays called The Soviet Mind, Russian Culture Under Communism by Isaiah Berlin, who was an Oxford philosopher. Really, he started it by telling a story. And, you know, there's always a way to get a point across. Telling it as a story always makes it easier for people to digest than just simply hitting them with a bunch of facts and figures and like trying to do economy and make it sound interesting when you're talking about the deficit and the national debt and here are the real numbers. You start sounding like Ben Stein in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, you know, Bueller, you know, people's eyes glass over, especially when you start getting into the nitty gritty of it. But so here's the story. Okay, there once was a man who worked as a steward on a seagoing ship. And he was told that in order to avoid breaking the plates during heavy weather, he should not walk in a straight line. He should actually try to move in a zigzag pattern to maintain his balance. So naturally, a storm came. He walked a zigzag pattern, but he kept dropping his plates and he broke them all in the process. And he was asked why he had not followed the instructions. He said, "I did, but when I zigged, the ship zagged, and when I zagged, the ship zigged." If that makes any – it makes sense if you understand what you're talking about. So the story of the steward and the ship, it's an allegory for how citizens under the Soviet government had to constantly – know where the party line was at any given moment. Of course, he never could. So acquiring this instinctive awareness of the precise moment when a zig turns into a zag, as Berlin says, is the most precious knack a regime citizen can acquire. Because if they miscalculate, they wind up facing kangaroo courts, followed by imprisonment or execution. The inability to master the art of identifying the correct opinion to hold at the correct time led to many of the Soviet regime's most faithful and devoted supporters to be exterminated. Well, right now they're simply calling it being canceled because you didn't hold the right opinion at the right time. Just ask J.K. Rowling, who for some reason is still an ass. I love trans people and we should go for trans rights. Oh, yeah, you're wonderful, you're perfect, you're wonderful. But at the same time, you know, trans women are not real women. Oh, you're going to hell for that one. You're going to smoke a turd in hell for that one, JK. That's where the zigzag happens, and it's happening all the time because who can ever keep up with the ever-changing opinions of the perpetually offended that's out there? This is what we're talking about here. That's the zigzag that we have to try to navigate. Well, I'm not even going to navigate. When they sit there and go, "Well, you have to have this opinion this week," my answer is F you. I have my opinions. Go screw yourself into the wall. You know, jump into the sewer. Drown yourself in that mire of shit. I don't care. Okay, I'm not zigging or zagging. But if you want to be part of the the crowd, then you have to learn how to do this. And this is how you can understand how this whole system works, based on the Soviet model. So identifying the correct opinion to hold at the correct time. And this was really true about among the intellectuals and scholars, which it usually is in communist regimes. The career and the lives of the writers, the scientists, the artists, the academics, all depended on the ability to swiftly and accurately know which type of pretzel to bend their mind into at any given moment. So how do large numbers of people suddenly come to adopt the same view on an issue that until recently nobody cared about? So Berlin, writing in 1952, observed that no one had figured out how to predict in advance the general line of the Communist Party in the Soviet Union. The shifts of correct opinion puzzled not only the people on the outside, but the Soviet citizens themselves. Even officials within the Communist Party couldn't figure out the reversals of correct opinion. The term political correctness was first used in 1917 by Marxist-Leninist devotees following the Russian Revolution. It was also used to describe the adherence to the policies and principles of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. In other words, the party line. And we see that happening in America. You know, you're going to toe the party line. And guess what? No, I don't. And by the way, that's not just the Democrats that do it. The Republicans are really good for that one, too. I've been yelled at by members of the Republican Party for not towing the party line. And believe me, the death looks that they would give me for basically telling them that they were full of shit was very satisfying. I actually kind of enjoyed it. So Berlin, Isaiah Berlin, goes on to write, the inability to predict curious movements of the line is a crucial failure in a communist. At best, it upsets all its personal calculations, and at worst, it brings total ruin. But even allowing for disparate factors such as nationalism, human fallibility, the confusion of human affairs in general, and the irregular path traversed by the ideological policy of the Soviet Union still remains abnormally puzzling. So the Marxist doctrine helps you understand all this. This is giving you this so that you can kind of understand how idiotic some of these people are, and how they're constantly trying to, you know, the people in America today, especially in the big liberal cities, how they're constantly trying to shift everything, and it's always shifting one way or the other. This is why we always hear new slogans coming out, and those that can't keep up are going to be left into the wayside. And they're the ones who are promoting it. Like the people who started the gay movement, like the Stonewall people getting beat up at a gay pride parade. If you don't know what Stonewall is, in 1969, the big Stonewall riots in New York City, the gay community, after one of their gay people got beat up by the cops, they finally decided they had enough. They had a big riot for a few days. And pretty much set the agenda for gay rights in America. Now the Stonewall people didn't zig when they should have. They zagged when they should have zigged, and now they're getting beat up at gay pride parades because they don't follow along with the whole new ideology that's been going on. So that's what it is. They kind of eat their own on it. So the Marxist doctrine again goes sort of like this. It helps you understand how this works. The Soviet officials drew their perspectives and policies from a whole bunch of different ideas, advanced by Marx, Engels, Hegel, also Lenin, Trotsky, Stalin, among others. An overarching theory drawn from these figures is that there are alternating phases of history, you know, the crests, you know, the highs and the lows, crests and the troughs, they call them. So there are periods when history appears to be in a state of rising conflict, moving towards a revolutionary climax. That's the crest. On the other hand, there are more frequent and lengthy periods of when things just generally seem calm and stable. It's your low point, your trough. this isn't something that Mark said should happen. Rather, he said this is what would happen. He was making the predictions about how history would unfold. Marxist doctrine claims that underneath the peaceful surface of societies, there's always a clash of factors or contradictions that will suddenly erupt and lead to a violent collision. According to the theory, these alternating phases gradually lead society step by step to a communist utopia. Read, on that note, read any analysis of what communism is, especially The Naked Communist by Cleon Skousen. Their agenda is not short-term, unfortunately, like a lot of people think in America. We have very short-term goals. The communist goal is a very long-term goal. This is why they'll move forward 2 feet, go back 6 inches, and then move forward 2 feet and go back 6 inches. And then everybody says, oh, well, they moved back. They're already a foot and a half up the road from where they were before, and you're saying that they're retreating and they're moving back. That's not how it works. So during these periods of stability, the revolution, and by the way, the revolution is always ongoing. It's never going to stop. The revolution's in a hibernation period, like a mole underground. This is when the revolutionaries consolidate their resources rather than expand their energies. This period lulls potential rivals and enemies into a false sense of security. We've seen it. The revolutionaries form alliances with other left-wing and progressive coalitions by downplaying their plans to initiate violent conflict. We've seen this happen. This is why you see all these left-wing groups get together, and all of a sudden some of them are being cast aside going, why? I don't understand what happened. So when the forces of history appear to align to give them an advantage, the revolutionaries drop all pretense of solidarity with these groups, and this breaks the false but, at an earlier stage, tactically necessary relationships with their soft and confused temporary allies. Think the Stonewall people that I just said. So when the chance presents itself, the revolutionary seizes as much power as they can to turn the dial of society closer to the paradise, you know, where unicorns fart rainbows. And the paradise they envision, which will surely come after enough alternating cycles. According to Marxist doctrine and revolutionary situations, communist devotees should liquidate their now worthless allies and advance to obtain power. In non-revolutionary periods, though, they should rest and plan. Look at what happened during the Bolshevik Revolution when that was going on. All these, you know, they got rid of all the people they thought were against them. These are the bourgeoisie. These are the people we're fighting against, and they got rid of them. Look what happened to the Tsar and his family. Look what happened to these generals who kept fighting and still kept loyalty to the Tsars. They were all executed as well. Even though the people that executed him knew him and liked him, it's like, sorry, man, you're on the wrong side, took them all out. When the whole revolution had finally succeeded, the communist party was in complete power, they went after all their people that were allied with them and got rid of them. They got rid of their generals. They got rid of all these people they considered a threat. All these people that were pushed, you know, we know you're our ally and thanks for all the help, but you're fish food now. That's how they work. And then, you know, and there are the people that were getting executed. Hey, wait a minute, I was on your side. It's like, yeah. Sucks to be you, doesn't it? They didn't understand because they didn't understand what was happening. So Berlin goes on to say that to accumulate strength by ad hoc alliances, by building popular fronts, adopting liberal and humanitarian disguises, by quoting ancient texts which imply the possibility and almost desirability of peaceful, mutually tolerant existence. And the thing is, it doesn't exist. Okay, the whole aim of that was just to create a popular public image and build alliances with people who the revolutionaries can use it later on to extend that they can help advance their aims and then later betray them. I would suggest that every single politician these left-leaning politicians who are completely useless otherwise better start paying attention to this. Look what happened during the Bolshevik Revolution. Look what happened during when the Nazis came up. Look what happened in China and still happening in China. Except now the Chinese CCP doesn't have any real allies over there. They don't need any. They control everything. But boy, did they go after their own right after Mao took power. I remember how many people under Mao. Was it like 40 million? 65 million? Still counting. They're over 100 million people now. So the pattern, this dialectical pattern, the peaks and valleys of apathy and fanaticism, the Soviet Union relied on to maintain their grip on power. Ordinary citizens, high-ranking officials alike, stood in awe of the unpredictable movement of the party line. You know, these movements, the mobilizations, the purges, and other party-led activities were not incidental to political life. They were essential to it. You know, the communist regimes thrived on a sense of embattlement, the relentless belief in danger, constant internal and external threat, an uncompromising desire to impose a political guidance that never allowed anybody to rest. And they still don't. In the Soviet Union and in China, Maoist China, the intellectuals and scientists in fields such as like physics, chemistry, and especially genetics had to do backflips to ensure that the results matched the party line at any given time. Anyone with a modicum of status in the regime had to grasp the intellectual trickery involved in justifying the glaring contradictions in thought, word, deed that form the underpinnings of the party line. Kind of sounds like 1984, doesn't it? Joseph Stalin said in 1930, "We are waiting for the withering away of the state, the highest development of state power in preparation for the preconditions for the withering away of state power," and that is the Marxist formula. Is it contradictory? Yes. But this contradiction is inherent in life and is completely mirrors the Marxist dialectic. So, in other words, the communist aim is to eliminate the state. But to do so, they must first enhance the state control to unprecedented levels. Mao said in 1949, "You want to abolish state power? Yeah, we do, but not right now. Why? Well, because domestic reaction still exists. Classes still exist. Our present task is to strengthen the people's army, the people's police, in order to protect the people's interests." Now, if that is not a contradictory statement, I don't know what is. Now, take all of this. I mean, this article goes on for quite a little bit here. I'll post it up in the chat room. Paste. But think about this in terms of what's going on now in this country. When look what happened during Trump's time in the White House. We saw the communist uprisings happening all over the country. Now, what effect did it have in the long run? Well, we'll see. In the short run, it gave, especially with all the apologists in the Democrat Party, who, by the way, who are useful idiots because they'll, if they get to a certain point, you know, where these communists don't need them anymore, they're going to turn around and they're going to get, they're going to turn right around on them, elected official or no. They remember, their objective is to get rid of the state. You're a politician, you're part of the state. But right now they need you to keep Antifa and Black Lives Matter and the American Communist Party from actually getting held accountable. This is why I always say Joseph McCarthy was a national hero, because he went full bore after these people, and we should have never dropped the ball on that one. But they're just useful. And by the way, all these so-called revolutionaries out, you know, Black Lives Matter and Antifa, guess what they are? They're the allies. The people that are actually bringing communism into the United States, when they achieve their goal to a certain extent, Black Lives Matter and Antifa, your guys are being lined up against the wall and getting rid of. Okay, you are fish food. You're a food for the hogs. You know, there's going to be some shallow pits dug with hundreds of bodies in it, and they're going to be yours. So we had that that revolutionary peak. And now it's kind of lulling down, but it not entirely just yet. So they're getting ready to make their next move, see what happens after the midterms. Maybe they'll start going again. Remember, peaks and valleys. This is, and the people who are in this communist movement, whether they realize it or not, are not going to be ready for what's coming. They don't know how to zigzag because they don't understand the dialectic that's going on. They don't know how to switch their mind to the new thing. What's the new thing I have to know? And if you don't know it right away, it's Mao's Red Guard. I believe they were called the Red Guard. They were absolutely like this. They became so violent and so intimidating towards the people. You know, people were almost in a good, getting ready to rebel against the Communist Party in China for it, because they were trying to, they were zigging and zagging so fast and trying to out communist their even themselves, that they would simply go and wholesale slaughter entire villages because they didn't follow exactly the Communist Party line that they had in their own heads. They got so bad that Mao Zedong had to send out a whole squad of soldiers and execute them all because they were completely out of control. And as long as we got these soon-to-be cannon fodder politicians out there kowtowing to Antifa and Black Lives Matter, you know, but they don't realize that they're cannon fodder just yet, they're going to keep doing what they're doing. And they're trying to create a new Bolshevik revolution right here in the United States. And mealy-mouthed, wishy-washy, spineless, gutless, nutless Republicans, like kind of like the guy he said tonight. I won't put him on that entire 100% plateau, but he's up there. You know, the ones who go out there and say, you know, we have to kind of make peace with the Democrats, and we kind of have to compromise. Is no, you idiots, because you're going to be the first ones on the chopping. You're the first ones fed to the alligators and the lions or whatever. The Democrats that are feeding you to the alligators and the lions, they're the next ones in line. And then by the time that anybody, you know, except for people who are paying attention, any of these idiots who think they're going to be in some sort of a position of power when everything's all said and done, they're not even going to see it coming until they're got the alligator's jaws snapped around their head, which rightfully should have been done at the beginning, you know, before we let it get out of too far out of control. So anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. I will see everybody on Friday on Granada Forum. Thanks for listening. And remember, stand up against communism, stand up against wishy-washy Republicans, and kick the Democrats in the balls. So have a good one, everybody. Remember, if you can't be good, be bad. Bye, everybody.
Host of Truth Jihad Radio. Federal prosecutors, Department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often ask me, just what is this Truth Jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio. Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio.
Are you interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery, real natural law. Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crip Rick every Monday night 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rich, I think, thank you. Welcome to the Crypt.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Thank you for tuning in to